And welcome to another episode of Game Over. I am your host, Simon Pazdor, joined by my faithful squad mate, Adam Pazdor. While Matthew Minya is actually, he just finalized, I don't know if you know this, but Matthew Minya this past week became John Tavares' agent. And so he's helping Johnny move to Toronto. So we wish Matt all the best, and hopefully that transition is going very well. And good luck to him and in future endeavors. We hope to see him very soon. So we took last week off. But we're back this week with a power hour, one full hour of video game news and discussion here on Game Over. Mm-mm-mm. I am very satisfied, or hopefully I will be by the end of this. But first of all, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing okay. Today, this is a very, very busy week for me, because I got a teaching opportunity next week for a seminar, but that essentially means I have to prep the seminar.
Yeah.
So, busy week, but good.
Good. Busy is good. I think around this time you don't want to be sitting on your butt too much.
I guess that's true.
Busy is good, I think. Who knows? Maybe that's just my opinion. Anyway, yesterday was, I don't know if you know this, yesterday was Canada Day. So today is Canada Monday, and tomorrow is Canada Tuesday, and every other day is Canada that day, because Canada. I almost did that unironically, because Canada is land of the free and home of the brave. So you know what? I want to take this time to shout out Some of Canada's developments in video game history, because it's not small. I think that there are some, how can I put this? Obviously, America and Japan are the biggest two countries for video games.
Yes.
And kind of Korea's up there too. But then some of the other countries you can think of, like Poland with The Witcher, or like England, who made the Fable series.
France puts out.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they have a couple of big developers.
Yeah, but for the most part, if you're thinking of a country, it's like, who's that one big developer? And Canada's kind of in the same boat, but when we're so tied to America, I think that a lot of people will give America credit for some of Canada's creations. And Canada deserves credit for Canada's creations. So I want to make some shout-outs to some of the great... first of all, actually, let me give you some stats, okay? So this is from...
I am a fan of stats.
This is 2016. This is a little out of date now. This is the stats in 2016 of the Canadian digital game sector.
Okay.
These are financial stats. 20,000 people employed. Sorry, 20,400 people employed. So 20,400 people employed in the Canadian game sector. That is a huge number.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. The number of studios, 470. 470 individual studios working in Canada.
So that's, and you said 20,000?
Yeah.
So that's about 50 people a studio?
Yeah. So it could be smaller. A couple of studios are probably just a few people, and then they have the juggernauts of the EA and the Ubisoft running around. But that's pretty remarkable. And an estimated contribution to Canada's GDP, $3 billion. So just in Canada, as of 2016, the video game industry was a $3 billion industry. And, of course, that can fluctuate based on whatever is released. So I would assume that that might actually go up if Ubisoft or EA
releasing a
big
game.
If they're releasing a major title, right? If they've been in development, because that's kind of how video games work. It's not a consistent... I mean, they're trying to make
very
it...
It's an ebb and flow.
It's an ebb and flow industry. But that's remarkable.
Just not good for job security, but...
Well, I suppose. But that's remarkable. Those are huge, huge numbers. So I'm just going to shout out some of them. BNAX... They're responsible for Skylanders. They're based in Quebec. Behavior Interactive. They've made some... they helped Bethesda develop Fallout Shelter. They're Canadian, too. BioWare, obviously, a huge Canadian...
Huge.
Yeah, we're going to talk about them in a second. Capcom has a Vancouver sector. They are a Vancouver studio. EA has a ton in Canada. Capybara Games makes a couple of indie games people have fallen in love with. HB Games, Hinterland Games... Clay Entertainment. Rockstar has a studio in Toronto that helped obviously develop the GTA series, and probably they're working right now on they helped develop Max Payne, GTA, and probably right now they're helping to work on Red Dead Redemption 2. Radical Entertainment, Relic Entertainment, The Coalition, Ubisoft, obviously a bunch of stuff in Canada. There's stuff all over.
There's a lot.
And of course Ubisoft announced last year that they're gonna, or I believe late last year or this year, that they're going to be opening a studio in Winnipeg. So it's
woot woot.
It's good kind of to be a Canadian gamer. And obviously, I mean, BioWare and Ubisoft are the two biggest ones.
Yes.
So if you love, and I've talked again, hold on to you. I'm going to throw you a curveball. I've talked about how much I love The Witcher.
Yeah.
And how I think it's the greatest game of all time. But it's not necessarily my favorite game. Mass Effect is still my favorite game. And my love for Mass Effect goes beyond what's actually on the disc. But Mass Effect is a wholly Canadian game.
Wholly Canadian?
Holy, I mean, it's made in Canada. Jennifer Hale.
Right.
Voice of Fenship. Canadian. Mark Meer. Voice of Broship. Canadian. What's his name? You go to Vancouver. Like, for people who play that game might not realize that it's Canadian because, again, Canadians kind of get confused for Americans in a lot of cases, right? You kind of have to point out that you're Canadian, which is what some of our greatest stars do, like, you know, Seth Rogen, Ryan Reynolds, Will Arnett, et cetera, et cetera. You have to point out that you're Canadian. In that game, nothing happens in America. You start off in Vancouver, you end up in London.
That's true.
Right? And so, and Shepard is born in various places, but, you know, we don't need America. It's the world. And that kind of, I wonder if America had developed the Mass Effect series if...
that attitude would have persisted.
Exactly. If the Alliance wouldn't have been just that much more American. I actually wonder that.
The ISA, which is, what's video game is that from? There's a video game where essentially they did that, and Yahtzee's comment was, oh, you're learning subtlety at last. You changed one letter.
Yeah, well done. Anyway, that's a bunch. Obviously, Ubisoft started off with the Prince of Persia series, so one of your favorite games of all time, I believe, Prince of Persia's Sands of Time, is developed in Montreal. And obviously, they've spread around the globe, but Ubisoft, if you've heard them talk, they're a very French-Canadian company.
Yes,
very French. So they're based in Montreal, and that's just awesome. I just love that. So I wanted to make a shout-out to them. And then obviously, you have some great voice actors like Bruce Greenwood, Seth Rogen. He hasn't done a ton of specifically game stuff.
Yeah.
But he is obviously a big actor. Will Arnett is another big actor. But one of the great voice actresses of all time, probably second only to Jennifer Hale, who's also Canadian, Tara Strong.
Yes.
Is Canadian.
That's true.
So we have some incredible, incredible Canadian talent. If you are incredible Canadian talent, feel good about yourself. And you are in good company. And,
if you're not incredible Canadian talent, but you're Canadian, feel good about yourself anyway.
Feel good about yourself, too, because you're in Canada and you're also incredible company. And you know what? Go out and be good at something. Pick something and just
do well.
And just be good at it. It's funny. Part of my job, it's not necessarily part of my job, but I travel all around. I was in a school teaching kids about animals because I do it in my spare time. my main time, I play video games. That's probably not the way that should be, but whatever. But I was actually asked to go to a school, one of the teachers said, it was a bit of an inner city school, and one of the teachers said, maybe after you're done talking about the animals, you can give them some advice because you've kind of taken a weird career path.
Yeah.
And first of all, I was like, would you call this a career? very flattering. But second,
she would call it weird.
Yeah, they definitely call it weird. But my advice to them and my advice to all the kids out there listening, because you know this is actually a surprisingly populated university campus right now, is find something and do it well. Preferably something you like, or else...
Preferably something that pays money.
Yes. Well, you know what? I'm relatively young, and I'm still working on the making actually money from it, but I'm proud that I can go to my job, and I can love what I do.
Yes.
And not a lot of people can do it, and it's just, A, find something you love, then find a way to get paid to do it, find how you do it, get paid to do it, and then do it well. Be excellent at something. It's okay to dip your toes into a lot of things, but find something and be excellent at something. That's a little bit of advice from us here at Game Over. Life advice and video game news. Anyway, we're going to talk a bit about NHL at the end there. But I do want to talk about, first of all, actually, since we have a full hour, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to talk about your addiction.
My latest one?
Yeah.
not the one I'm indulging right now, but...
the one you're indulging right now is clearly simply talking on the radio. You would never be multitasking,
I would never multitask.
You would never delve that low.
No. But no, I found out fairly recently that Darkest Dungeon has a second DLC, and it's called The Color of Madness. And I went and I haven't played Darkest Dungeon in some months before that. And I was like, okay, I mean, eventually I'll go back to this, but playing a game in that is a significant time investment because it's a long, painful struggle.
It's sort of like for people who maybe haven't heard the previous, it's sort of in the XCOM Civilization where it's like a long...
Yeah,
and you might lose. Is that correct?
Yes, you definitely might lose.
Yeah, so in comparison to most games, or if you slave away at it long enough, you will eventually win, even if you fail over and over and over again. In some games like these, you can play for hours and hours and hours and still lose.
Yeah. And I mean, at some point, like, if you play, if you're not playing on the hardest difficulty, there is no official lose condition, but there might come a point in the game where you're just like, this is not worth it anymore.
Yeah.
And there are also, like, I've seen some people who, in the first week or two in-game, I mean, not in playing it, have just a run of bad luck and like, oh, screw this, I'm starting over.
Yeah.
And my advice to anyone picking up Darkest Dungeon is do not be afraid to do that. If you get a bad start, don't let that color the rest of your run.
Just throw in the king or whatever?
Yeah, just knock the king over and,
knock the king
and start
over
again.
And start again.
But anyway, yeah. So what the thing I really liked about the first Darkest Dungeon DLC, The Crimson Court, was in addition to doing vampires in a way that was actually kind of interesting and neat.
Whoa.
Well, basically, because they're mosquitoes. Like that's essentially the idea, they're all these insects, which is really cool.
No, I remember.
But it changed up the gameplay. Like, the base gameplay of Darkest Dungeon is go into a dungeon, you walk down hallways, you go into rooms, you fight things, and, like, if the dungeon is long enough, you get a campfire where you get to rest and recuperate, and generally you have a mission, like, explore 90% of the rooms or kill everything in here.
Yeah.
And the Crimson Court switched that up in that it there were only, like, 4 missions in the court, but unlike the other ones, if you got your butt kicked, you could run away and come back to the same point you were in. And the maps were gigantic, so you could never do any given mission in one go. So you had to sort of keep plodding your way through it, which I thought was a really neat mechanic. And the bosses were cool, which was another,
sort of chip
another
away at it.
Yeah, you were chipping away at it. And you had to deal with sort of the mechanic of your characters being cursed.
Yeah.
And essentially the vampire hunter who was chasing them down.
Yeah.
So that was, like, it was new and it was different, and it made, and its impacts on the rest of the game made the whole game feel fresh, which mm-hmm. I think is exactly what a DLC should do.
Yeah.
And then they've come up with the new one, The Color of Madness, and they did it again.
Oh.
So the new location now is called the Farmstead, and it brings with it a new currency in crystals. And crystals have this thing called shard dust, which can give you a buff in combat, but that's, and at a cost, but that's not really what they're there for. Mm. But they're interesting in other cases because you can buy new trinkets, which are essentially the buffs you give your characters that last the whole mission, with shards. And you can buy new districts, which are permanent upgrades to your base, with shards. But the most interesting thing is the way that the farmstead works, because they threw out the whole idea of exploring the map. It is now one room where you have just a progress bar of, if you kill enough enemies, you get through.
Huh.
And they just keep coming back. And Darkest Dungeon has sort of set up to, when you get into a combat, you never want it to persist. Because a combat that goes a long time is a combat that you lose.
Yeah.
Your characters are just not equipped for a long slog. You want to win as fast as
possible. Yeah, you're in there for the sprint, not the marathon.
Exactly. And so this is like, now you have a marathon. And what do you do?
They force you. Okay, that's good. I like expansion packs and stuff like that where it forces you to play it a new way.
Yeah. So, once again, just like with the Crimson Curse, strongly recommended. Pick it up now. I have no idea if it's on sale because I bought the DLC basically as soon as it came out. I can actually check that. And the other great thing about Darkest Dungeon, of course, is that it has one of the, in my opinion anyway, the strongest mods. Like, because there's just so many of them that are just really, really good. And I'm sure anyone who plays a PC game will say that about whatever their favorite game is. But I really think the Darkest Dungeon modding community is just fantastic. They've always got new classes to try out. And if there are certain things in the game that are niggles, then you can just mod them away because people have certainly thought of that. Like, the inventory space is the big thing where I'm like, I appreciate that this is supposed to be really, really hard, but even that is a step too far for me.
You always make me nervous when you use the word niggles. It's just so uncommon, and I don't think anyone totally has a, not even the person who invented it totally has a grasp of exactly what it's supposed to mean. It just feels like
small annoyances.
No, when you see niggles, I think of like a Lovecraft thing. Oh, yes, that's a niggle. It's the thing that burrows into your brain, and it's what drove this old man who, like, is yelling now in a corner. It's what's infected him, and you need to bring a priest to, like, drive it out. For some reason, that's what it brings up for me.
I need a young priest and an old priest.
I need a young priest and an old priest!
That's a reference no one our age is going to get.
That's a shame. Actually, they've been talking about revitalizing Austin Powers. I love Austin Powers. Please don't. They're good the way they are. Yeah. And Mike Myers, I think, has lost a step.
Yeah. Nope. I think just leave that alone. It's fine.
All right. So a few weeks ago, we did something that we've never done before, and I thought it was a huge success. We went over the Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, Let's Go Eevee trailer. We're going to do it again.
Not that trailer, though.
We're going to re-go over the Pokemon Let's Go Eevee, Let's Go Pikachu trailer. So first of all, it was fun. I actually re-listened that episode in preparation for this one. It was fun to see how wrong we were about so many different things because there's just a whole whack of Pokemon information that's out now.
Yeah.
And so perhaps one of these weeks we'll compile it and talk about it, maybe even next week. Because we may or may not, it's still TBD, whether or not we have an hour-long exit episode next week as well.
I'm going to be racing in from the other side of town to
make that, because
that's the first day of the teaching seminar, which is at the other U of M campus.
There's another U of M campus?
Yeah, Bannatyne, downtown.
Anything is, if it's downtown, it's officially U of W. I don't care what they tell me. That's what it is. Anyway, so this time we're going to do it, but with a different game, yes, obviously. We're going to do the trailer review of Fire Emblem Three Houses, because we are hardcore, like not the most hardcore, but we are dedicated to Fire Emblem fans, and we're not, I can say dedicated in that we haven't hopped on with Awakening.
Yeah.
We were there pre-Awakening. We played the Tellia series. I played a couple of the games on the GBA back when you could rent them.
Those are the days.
Yes, and then now we've done multiple playthroughs on the Tellia series and Awakening and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we are dedicated Fire Emblem fans.
And not hardcore enough to have enjoyed Fates, though.
Yes, we didn't track down, well, not to enjoy Fates, but we still played it.
We did play it, that's true.
I had more fun with it the second time. I think I appreciated it more when I looked at it for what it was trying to do. There's still a lot of missteps in Fates. That waifu simulator was still pretty weird.
Yeah.
And a lot of, when you try to get around the fact that they just forced in a whole bunch of Awakening stuff, I think less was more with that game. I think if they had taken out some stuff and simplified it and not made you buy it three times.
Yeah, that would have also been
that
nice.
Would have been an improvement. But they didn't. And Fates is what it is. And Shadows over Valentia is what it is. Anyway.
Which was better, but still like
weird. It was different. And I appreciated it for being different. That one committed. I'll give it that.
It committed to being
picked,
nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. They picked a Fire Emblem where the mechanics were drastically different, and they committed to it. Anyway, so Adam, on your computer, open up the 2-minute, 10-second trailer. All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to do the exact same thing. I'm going to try to tell you when to pause it, but we'll see because we're not totally in sync here. And we're going to go through the Fire Emblem trailer. Fire Emblem Three Houses revealed it, announced last year at E3, revealed this year for E3, and we're going to go through and we're going to talk about what we see. So we're going to start here in 3, 2, I'll turn up the sound a little bit, 3, 2, 1, here we go. Ooh, that snap. Love that snap. Okay, so we're going over a thing,
long
and
ago, the divine Seiros
I won't talk over this.
A revelation from the goddess, a gift to help guide the lost.
We'll pause it right there, actually. That means nothing to me. So you actually get to see the map here, which is people have zoomed in and focused on this. And I assume this will be when the actual game comes out, this will be a bigger deal. But when you play a Fire Emblem game, geography actually does come into it.
Yeah.
Because you're playing on different maps, and so it's where you move around. So obviously it looks like it's a land of, there's something in the middle. I can't really even tell what it says. Because it's written in script, which is next to impossible to read. But there's basically three kingdoms. So there's a thing kingdom
with
on
a
the
thing in the middle.
Yeah. Yes, with a thing in the middle. There's a giant mountain pass in the middle, and then there's three kingdoms. There's one kind of on the south, which looks like the biggest one. One on the north, and one on the east, I suppose.
Yeah,
northeast. But it looks like there's like a southern kingdom and two northern kingdoms. To be quite honest with you, the southern one looks like it's a lot bigger, with a huge mountain pass dividing the continent in two. In fact, there's a lot of mountains.
Yeah, there's a...
And so in the classic Fire Emblem...
mountainous, sort of.
Yeah, in classic Fire Emblem fashion, it looks like it's... There's clearly land that is in this continent. Like, there's a couple islands in the bottom right there. But it looks like there's a mountain pass that prevents people from leaving the northern.
Yeah.
So we'll see if that comes up. This looks very similar to the Tellia series, actually. And we don't know if anything's going to happen to the south. I don't know if there's a connecting down there, but for the most part, it says we're focusing on this.
This big landmass.
On these kingdoms and trying to get them together. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, we're going to continue here.
Now,
The goddess watches over Fodlan. All right, so we're actually gonna
goddess again.
Yeah, so we're gonna go back here in a second. I'm gonna try to pause it on the screen here. So we have a painting, a mural, I should say, of a goddess with a dragon over top. Now, to be honest, this might anger some truly hardcore Fire Emblem fans. I could probably do without the whole dragon thing. I could do with a more grounded Fire Emblem thing, but I was just looking at the Fire Emblem Reddit, and a couple of people were just like, it's not Fire Emblem left the whole dragon messing everything up.
If there is, or if
there unless is. There is.
Oh, unless there is. That's
It's not true Fire Emblem. It's just, apparently it's such a staple. I think they could get rid of it. I think I could definitely take a game off of it, but it looks like this game is not that game. So, there's a goddess. She's kneeling down. She's putting a curvy, almost like Levin sword, into the ground here, and then there's a bunch of people in the background, look like commoners, and a dragon over top of her. The goddess watches over, and then we'll cut to... I'm for Adam in the room here, and for the people who are trying to follow along at home, I'm basically going to stop whenever the screen changes, and we can look at. So this is the first... This isn't gameplay that we're looking into. This is a cutscene. So clearly they've adapted... One of the things I actually like about... I should finish my sentences more. Yeah. Clearly they've adapted the anime style of Echoes.
Yeah.
So Echoes, I think, was them dipping their water in a lot of concepts, one of which was... Dipping their toe in the water of a lot of concepts. Okay. There we go. Dipping their water. Yeah, it's like soaked in wood. That's what it sounds like. Thank you for catching that, because I listen to our podcast to see where I screw up, and I frequently do. Dipping their toes in the water of a lot of concepts, one of which was a more anime style of storytelling.
Yeah.
Which is fine, because I think a lot of Fire Emblem fans are also anime fans. I know Matt's a big anime fan, and he's also a big Fire Emblem fan. I do like that the costumes here look grounded, though.
Yeah, looks quite sensible.
Yeah, this looks very sensible, so we're going to continue here. I like the way the characters look in the cutscenes, knowing that it's not gameplay yet. I like the way the characters look. From her kingdom above. So here we have another. We have the end of the mural. So then we have the bottom was the people, and then the top we have a big white dragon, and then a whole bunch of dragons flying around, and then there's a goddess in the sky. And so it cuts from the goddess to this lady in the middle of a battlefield.
It's about to take a sword to the face.
Yeah, it looks like it's... So... The Arbiter. It's not the same person. But if... Okay, so the way I'm paused here is I have the lady, she's dressed like a... She's in the middle of a battlefield, and yeah, she's about to take a sword to the face. The guy is winding up. But if you look at her, there's actually a lot we can tell from this image here. First of all, she has green hair.
Yes.
Now, the heroes of the game traditionally have blue hair, but the dragons traditionally have green hair.
Yeah.
So if you look between this and, if you want, the really obvious one, the fact that she has dragons on her crown here, this to me, this is a dragon.
Oh, she does, yeah.
This is a dragon.
Yeah.
That we're talking about.
She's also
here.
Holding a shield.
So it's a Manaquite or whatever, this world's version of that. I believe they've announced that this is not connected to any previous games. Which I kind of like, because the implication was
that
Awakening...
Being separated from...
Yeah. Like, yeah. It was cute enough that Awakening was like, oh, the hero King Marth. And then Fates, it was like, oh, you guys are from this long lost world.
Yeah.
Let's have a contained game here, please.
Just one place.
I would appreciate that. So, yeah, this... Clearly she's got a... It looks like she's... I don't know, North... She kind of looks like a Valkyrie to me. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Like a dragon Valkyrie. But she does have she's clearly a dragon, but she does have a shield.
Yeah.
So do Manaquites, Lagoos, whatever you want to call it, do they actually fight?
Maybe.
Is she hiding it? We don't know. But it looks like she's being attacked by a barbarian here.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue.
Intervention.
Yeah, someone came in and blocked it. And so now we're seeing the end of the mural, which is basically her up top there. So we've zoomed in her face, and now we have Fire Emblem Three Houses, the first announcement of the
title.
First of all, what are your thoughts so far?
Well,
we've seen very little, but what are your thoughts on this very little so far?
Well, we saw three kingdoms and it says three houses, and I'm imagining that isn't a coincidence.
No. Yeah.
But right now, like, we've, again, everything up until that title card could have been almost for any Fire Emblem game.
Yeah.
Like, you showed me that and I went, okay, this is Fire Emblem, but which one?
It's so generic, and we'll get later on in the video. Like, first of all, I like what I've seen. I like that new animation style, and in Echoes in particular, I didn't mind when they cut back from the... It even started in the Tellia series. I didn't mind when they cut back from the turn-based combat, or when, like, you didn't attack, and if it's a boss fight, it cut away from your attack and showed a cutscene of the two characters fighting. Like,
oh, yeah.
The Black Knight and Ike
fight.
I didn't mind that at all. And they did that again. I don't think they did it in Awakening. At all. Or Fates.
I remember it in Awakening.
But they did it again in Shadows of Valentia, or Echoes, okay. I should just call it, because that's a waste of a name. They did it again in Echoes, which I liked quite a bit, actually. And it looks like they might be doing something like that again here. Certainly okay. There's a more cinematic presence. My one worry is, and we'll get introduced to A, our protagonist, and B, the heads of the houses. I like the Tellia series a lot. One of the things I don't like is, the young leader of the Senate, the Empress.
Yeah.
She's a good person, but, like, the old corrupt officials behind the scenes were... Like, it sort of worked in that game. I don't want them to do it again.
No.
And so I'm nervous if they're going to introduce us to three heads of houses, and we're supposed to like them. I'm nervous that it's going to be like that again.
Oh,
like,
yeah. These are good people, but yeah, like, everyone behind them
exactly,
is...
Exactly, exactly. These are the monarchs, and they're fine, but they have, like, shadow people pulling strings. I don't want that. I would like some actual conflict.
Yeah.
And the Tellia series had the biggest cop-out in the world with that whole Blood Pact crap.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Like, the person with the most motivation to be evil in that one was actually Ashnard, because his was, I want to awaken this dragon, I have to start a war to awaken the dragon, so therefore I start a war. The rest of it was just like, I want to do this to be evil. I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I think Fire Emblem could have more nuance. Anyway, 29 seconds. We're going to continue here.
I'm way ahead of you, Ben.
Yes, you are. So, okay. So I paused it at 33 seconds here. First view of...
the battlefield.
The battlefield. So 3D, so to speak, Fire Emblem. It's a very square box. This might even... Actually, no. This is definitely one of the first missions, if not the first mission.
Yeah.
So here we have, you have 5 units, the enemy looks like they have 3 units. How do you like the graphics of this?
I'm fine with this. I don't ever expect better than this from Fire Emblem, and it looks cleaner than probably most of the other ones did.
It does. It does look like a very neat, clean update to the way it was done in the Tellia series. And by the way, for the people out there who might not know, Tellia series, I'm talking about Path of Radiance and its direct sequel, Radiant Dawn.
Yeah.
The only two. Console Fire Emblem games we've ever had. So they are the most direct comparable to this one, because everything else has been on mobile.
Mobile, yeah.
Yeah, or exactly.
Handheld.
Rather. Handheld would be a better way of phrasing it, even though this will technically be on handheld too. Anyway, so then
You've picked Edelgard.
Yeah, you've picked Edelgard. Now people are falling in love with Edelgard, and it's, I think, further proof that this is early on, because she's level 3. And she has very little health. She has 29 health. But this...
I mean, that's more than some other characters have had at low levels before.
True, I suppose. So maybe she's pre-promoted or something like that. So this screen looks very different. So she has... to be honest, I don't totally know what to make of this. So I've paused it on the... They've selected Edelgard.
Yeah, I'm...
And they've... And so...
I'm at 34 seconds.
Yeah, so we can see... Red lines going from her. So first of all, they have the movement that's in blue and the attack that's in red. That's the same.
Yeah.
But we can see there's a red line from her going to two of the bad guys.
Yeah.
And there's a red line from another dude unrelated to her going to the third of the bad guys. I really don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
So we'll see that in a second. I'm not sure if it's going to be an assist. So let's continue here.
Go ahead, give me orders.
So she runs in. They go ahead, give me orders, obviously.
Orders.
Yeah.
So the person we can see is it's an axe man in the back there. It looks like they have an axe.
She has an axe.
She has an axe, but the third person on top, like there's the two, there's like what looks like
a
swordsman.
I think he has a lance.
Yeah, I thought it was like a pole axe.
Oh, maybe.
It's tough to tell. It's only in, actually, can we get this up to 1080, Nintendo? No, it's not any better on 1080. but so she clearly has a lot of options here. So attack, we know that one. Magic, we know that one. Clearly she knows magic too.
Yeah.
Very few characters can use access to magic.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Combat arts is making a return, it looks like, from Echoes.
Yeah, that's new to... That's not common, certainly.
That's new to the main series, so to speak, or to the non-updated version. And if those people don't remember, in Echoes, basically... The whole combat system was, I don't want to say dramatically different, but it was like a counter-evolution. So Fire Emblem evolved in one way, and this was like an ultimate. It was like the marsupial to the mammal of Fire Emblem. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see where you're
It was like
from.
Alternate reality Fire Emblem, where you even if you didn't equip it, you always had the worst possible weapon. You could equip a better weapon, but better weapons were very hard to find. And then not only did you have a regular attack, but you had special attacks where you do whatever it was. I forget most of them.
Yeah.
And
I
then
didn't play enough of Echoes to remember.
Yeah, it's been a while. So she has the combat arts. I don't mind that coming back, actually. I like the idea of combat getting a little splash.
Yeah.
Formation.
That's interesting.
Do you think that's to do with the axemen, pikemen, whatever it is back there? Do you think... What do you think formation's about?
That's a good question. I think, given that what we know is coming up here, in that you are not, in fact, you, but are a unit of several people, of which you're lead.
Yeah, you think that's...
I think it has to do with that. So there might be something like you could attack in a... maybe a more defensive way, or maybe... like, actually, that might mix with the combat arts. I don't know. Because... I'm not sure what you'd do with an axe, but like if you had archers, right, you could have a formation of where it's not shoot to kill, it's shoot to pin down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or something
like that.
Or so, shoot to weaken or something. Yeah.
So my suspicion would be that the formation stuff is more to do with your personal unit as opposed to the guy you're connected to, but I don't know.
We don't know. And when now that she's here, she's moved up, she's moved next to an enemy unit. First of all, that enemy looks like it's dressed actually kind of similar to the Dragon Girl.
It does.
And now she has options to attack the one in front of her, as well as the three others that are farther away, including one that's quite far away. So I'm wondering if magic or combat arts don't affect range or something like that. Anyway, we might actually come back to it. But let's continue on so we can see what happens here. It's time to measure your... So here we can see what she's got equipped.
So she picked attack, I think.
She picked attack, and she's an aristocrat. We can see her class right there.
So that's clearly a fancy class.
Yes.
That'll be like lord or something.
Yeah, so we can see the battle data. I like that a lot, actually. We don't see her stats.
Yeah.
We can see that it's going to have, for those of you who like delving into the advanced, I don't want to say the advanced stats because that's almost a sports term.
Yeah.
But for those of you who want to really delve into the meat of it, of what's going on in these games, it has that. So she has a 71% chance to hit. She's going to do 17. Her attack is 17, so that clearly would go against the defense of the other character.
Yeah.
And we'll see if she selects what weapon she selects. Or if she just goes with the axe.
Okay, so yeah, she's picked the axe. So now we get to see... And now, yeah, you see the fortunes.
Yeah.
Which is quite interesting. Oh, so this person she's up against has a name.
Yeah, she's up against someone named Mercedes. So Mercedes looks like she's actually about to... First of all, Mercedes is weakened. It looks... Oh, no, that's the total damage. So Mercedes is going to do a lot... Is actually going to attack twice and is more likely to hit. But Eldegard here is going to hit more with that axe.
Yeah. Eldegard's hit is now only 67.
Yeah.
Down from 71 because of Mercedes' avoidance, I think? Or I don't remember.
Yeah, something like that. However they want to phrase it.
Mercedes is at 2 health.
Yeah, Mercedes is about to get wrecked here. So, hold on. I went back too far.
Give me orders.
I'm going to only go back a second here.
Whoa!
That's my bad. Okay, so I just froze it right when Eldegard runs in. So she's running in to attack Mercedes.
Yeah.
Or Mercedes is about to be at 2 health because she is very low.
Oh, about to be at 2 health. Yes,
about
you're right.
To be. Yeah. So we can see as she's running, we'll get to the running thing in a second.
Yeah.
But once again, they have the numbers down at the bottom there. So.
Yeah.
But this is the hugest change so far. So Eldegard isn't Eldegard. She's basically leading a unit.
Yeah.
She's not a unit, she's leading a unit. And so when she runs in, she has a whole bunch of axemen with her. And so she leads the charge, and it looks like the axemen kind of go up against...
Mercedes'
people, yeah. Okay, so we're on Dimitri.
And then we cut to, Dimitri out of nothing.
Yeah, so we don't know who... Eldegard is leader of one of the houses, Dimitri's leader of the other one. I believe Claude, I think that's the name. We'll get to that in a second. I think he's the leader of a third one. So Dimitri is fighting an unnamed soldier.
Yeah.
Here. And he's got way better odds. So Eldegard was in tough to get a hit. Dimitri is smoking this dude.
Yeah, 100% going to hit a hit for do 12 damage.
Exactly.
The other guy at most does 2 and basically a coin toss to hit.
Yeah. But you can see units fighting in the background.
Yeah.
They're like, the new battle animations look super cool.
Oh, here's Claude.
Yeah. Okay, so there's Claude. So Claude's an archer, and he's attacking with a group of archers.
Yeah.
Once again, just against a kingdom soldier.
Yeah.
So his arrow hits the main guy, but all his squad's arrows hit the squad of the guy that he's attacking. So that's all new. And that, I doubt that actually affects the stats. I think that's fluff.
I would agree, but it's welcome fluff.
I'm happy to have that fluff.
Yeah.
Yes, I okay, we're on the same page on that one, 100%. All right, so now we go to another anime style thing of just this very evil looking army.
Yeah.
Pan above them, and then they have first of all, the armies are huge. I don't know if that's going to be represented in the game, but this looks like an enormous, enormous army. We're looking at some Pegasus Knights right here. I'm at 50 seconds in.
Such a brutal, irrational.
And I keep zooming in, so it's zooming around.
Some believe the crests tokens.
Okay, so we might actually have to go over it again and just listen to what she's saying, but we're going to keep. So now we're back to Eldegard. And we can see a screen that we didn't have before, which is in the bottom right here. We get
a map.
Yeah, we have a very traditional Fire Emblem map. So Eldegard is attacking him with. She's an axeman, she's got a swordsman, a lanceman, a bow, and a mage. Very well rounded.
Yeah.
There, Eldegard. And so we'll see which she attacks here.
Are necessary to
so what the heck is she doing here?
Maintain order.
There's a question for you. What the heck just happened?
Yeah, what is going on here?
They don't show us. So actually, I'm going to turn it down. They don't show us what's happening here. So it's so tough to tell.
Yeah. Like, she does something, and then it goes to the next guy, and he appears to select an entire section of people.
This looks to be, like, when we talked about moments ago, we talked about fluff. I think that was fluff, but this is clearly different, because it zooms on Eldegard, and you can see her whole unit there, and you can see her companion's whole unit there, which is not a view you had before.
No.
And then without picking anything, it goes. So is this just they pressed a button to go from the traditional screen to the lower screen?
That might be the case.
Probably. Not sure, though. It does look cool. So she's selected, or the character is selected, for this dude with the sword, Byleth, to attack Hilda again. Eldegard is fighting named characters. Interesting. So, yeah, instead of going the traditional way, they've picked Byleth to attack this person with the sword. That's going to go in there. Standard thing. Now, okay, so I paused at 104. This looks like actual animation here.
Yeah.
So now we're looking at a castle. Huge castle. And I think that's your character. That's the Robin, my unit character, is what they call him in the Fire Emblem series. So it's about to pan around an enormous castle. So if you liked running around in the overworld in Echoes, like going through those caves, it's back.
Yep.
If you didn't like it, I didn't care for it.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me, and it didn't win me over. I could take it or leave it. But clearly they like it. Because
I like that this doesn't seem to be a dungeon so much as this is sort of your home base.
Yeah.
So I like the idea. It's kind of, you know, Mass Effect-y that way, is that you have your home base where you can run around and talk to your
so
people
maybe,
before you do stuff.
Maybe you're, and like, if we go back a second here, you are, like, the castle that presumably you're in. We can only assume that because they show a castle in a mountain, and then you go to a castle.
Yeah.
So we can assume that that's the one on the mountain. Maybe you're that last kingdom right in the middle.
Oh, caught in the middle of all of this.
You're caught in the middle, because the middle was a bunch of mountain passes. So maybe you're, like, the mountain people.
Maybe.
And so then you have to try and get them all to cooperate, or otherwise you're screwed because you're going to be caught in the middle of all the thing. That would be my only guess.
Yeah.
It does look sort of Mass Effect, sort of Dragon Age, very BioWare.
Yeah.
You're running around a town area. I did like how there's NPCs walking around, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's populated. Not densely populated.
But populated.
But people are moving in real time, and you can run around. Maybe you have to actually run to the shop. There'll probably be some emphasis on... I pause at 118. There'll probably going to be some emphasis on character customization.
Yeah.
Because if they make you look at your character for extended periods of time as you run around, customization would have to come hand in hand with that.
Yeah.
Right?
You'd want to look different.
You'd want to look different. You want to look unique.
Since you're looking at you.
Yeah, since you're looking at you. Here's looking at you, kid. So now we're in what looks like a library or a study.
A classroom.
Classroom, actually. That's not as bad, because they are desks. Yeah. And so you've met up. Your character has met up with Eldegard. I'll just call it my unit.
Yeah.
You met up with Eldegard, and she's asking for training.
Which is interesting.
That's new. We haven't had characters train other training. She wants to hone her skills for the mock battle.
And you can ask.
So maybe that's why she's fighting named characters, because Eldegard is training, and so it's not actually killing people. So you're fighting other units of yours?
Maybe.
But why are you teamed up with Eldegard?
Yeah.
Are you de facto helping her out? We don't know. We're speculating. Feel free to speculate with us on Facebook, Game Over UMFM. We don't know. Let's keep going. Here we go. So she, I mean, we saw, she had the option to use magic, even though she didn't have magic. I'm not sure if that's just a thing that's going to be there, or if she can use magic and we just didn't see it. But she can definitely use swords and axes, we know that, and so she has the ability to gain skill in swords.
Or magic, which is a choice you couldn't make before. So that's interesting. I wonder if they're revamping the way that the class system works.
I wouldn't mind that at all, actually.
It'd be nice to see something.
I was looking around on the forums, which is a dangerous place to be, but I was there.
Yeah.
I was looking around, and one of the things I saw that people really were drawn to about Fates was the level system. Because Awakening, you could break it so easily.
Yeah.
But Fates, you could jump around, but you always went up.
Yeah.
And so you had to plan your path knowing that you were always going up. You couldn't go backwards. And people were saying they want that in the new game. I actually agree with it.
Yeah,
I think
me
that
too.
Was a it's, you should be able to get what you want, but there needs to be a goal.
Yeah, no, I think Awakening was a little too weird, cuz once you got, if you got the DLC and essentially had infinite access to Master Seals, then yeah, you could
break the game.
Yeah, you could totally break the game.
You could break the game.
I mean, to beat the DLC, you kind of needed to. But for the main game,
the DLC was designed for people who had broken the game. We'll put it that way. Anyway, so yeah, she's developing her skills. Not sure what that means. We'll have to see a skill tree. Who knows? My axe skills, as you wish. There's always room for improvement. Okay, that's pretty generic. By the way, if she wants to ask you about something, so. Story implications there. We've cut to another scene with Dragon Girl. Again, she's got green hair. She's got a dragon crown. She's holding a staff which has dragon wings on it. Or it looks like a sword, actually.
I think it's a sword.
Perhaps a sword from the beginning. Almost looks like it's got bone. It doesn't look like it's in good shape. Let's put it that way.
It looks like it's made of bone. And it does look cracked.
Looks like it's in bad shape. Yeah. But she's got it. So clearly she survived the guy interfering on her behalf.
Yeah.
She's rubbing her face up against the sword.
And she's talking to it.
So here we have formations.
Here we go.
So we were talking about this. So what does this do? So we have, I think it's Dimitri, right?
Yeah.
Because he's got his group of pikemen. And he's made his people get into a arrow formation. And then they rush the opponent in a flying V. So I think this is probably another formation. So that was the Dimitri formation.
Yeah.
We have no idea what it does, but clearly there's a way to manipulate your characters, like your unit.
Yeah.
And then I think is this Claude? No. This is a mage doing it. So a mage attacking from a hill cliffs were a big deal, but is the actual geography of the map going to be a bigger deal this time?
Yeah, elevation.
I wouldn't mind that if it was. This pikeman who's receiving this magic blast certainly doesn't seem to be having a good time. We have more anime stuff.
Whoa!
Generic evil-looking bad guy with the Valentine's whip from Soul Calibur.
Yeah.
So he's attacking large groups of people.
And winning.
And winning, yeah, definitely winning. It was very Dynasty Warriors there, attacking a large group. And now I've paused it on this strange automaton thing. So it looks like...
Yeah, I'm there too.
In a cavern, a cave, a temple, something, and this weird big defense... thing.
Golem, yeah.
Golem.
Not sure what this is.
Hard to describe it. But there it is. And Claude is attacking it with arrows.
And it doesn't seem to be doing much good.
Yeah, so now your character, we actually get to see you do something. You have a sword in this case, and you're attacking an enemy with your sword. And now we go back to a scene of a girl. Again, does she have green hair, or is she just sitting on a... We go back
in
to someone...
lighting.
Yeah, in green lighting. We go back to someone sitting on a... sleeping. On a throne.
Someone quite young. Well, or a dragon, because we know they can...
Yeah, we know they do.
And
they
we get
the
informed
that...
Promise me that you won't
forget me. Well, yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah, who knows?
So that's, you know what, let's go back. We're gonna do it all again. We won't interrupt it this time, and we're going to actually listen to what they say and see if we can gather anything. Because I think we pretty much gameplay stuff. A lot
right
of it...
the beginning?
Yeah, a lot of it, they've put the seeds in there, but we don't necessarily know what those seeds are going to grow into. And perhaps they don't know.
Yeah.
Because this is coming out, like, next year. It's coming out in a year from now. So this isn't, like, a fall 2018 release. This is still probably pretty early on. But let's listen to the story and see if we can gather anything. I think it's pretty generic anime stuff, but here we go. Love that snap.
Long ago, the divine Seiros received a revelation from the goddess, a gift to help guide the lost. Now, the goddess watches over Fodlan from her kingdom above as the mother of all life, the arbiter of every soul.
You know, let's pause right there. So we have a little bit of information. So long ago, the goddess gave the divine Seiros, who clearly is that
person, that woman,
the dragon. So that's just always how it goes.
Yeah.
So is this the woman at the beginning who was in the mural? She was given the divine gift. Is this dragon lady also a descendant or something like that? We don't know. But now, room for corruption of the goddess because she's in charge of everybody.
Yeah.
So similar to the Tellius series where the goddess was in charge of everything. Who knows? That's all we know. But we got, I think, the name Falkland or something like that. Clearly that's the name of the continent.
Yeah.
I would bet. We'll keep going.
Go ahead. Give me orders. It's time to measure your worth as an instructor.
Pause right there. You're an instructor.
Yeah.
So, confirming early on what we see later... that you, I think you start with Eldegard. Maybe you can pick which one you start with. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
But it looks like you start off as certainly Eldegard's combat instructor. It'll be him.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Different.
Different. Different's fair.
I mean, it's kind of like the relationship your character had with Krom, but this one makes a little more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, clearly, I mean, we'll have to see what the background is there, but yeah, interesting. But they once again, they found a story reason for why you're a tactician.
Yeah,
that was Robin's big thing, which keeps coming up. God, when I play Fire Emblem Heroes or play him in Super Smash Bros., it's all he talks about. Ah, I'll have to change my strategy.
Yeah,
like those the strategist thing is so it's all they can talk about. If you make a strategist character,
oh yeah,
they have to be like the overblown chess master, right?
Yeah.
They once again they found another story reason. Anyway, we're gonna continue here. Fighting still looks good.
Yep. Giant
Such
army.
A brutal, irrational world we live in. Some believe the crests, tokens of the goddess's power, are necessary to maintain order. But they're wrong, teacher. The crests.
All right.
Okay, that's a piece of information now.
Yeah, so once again, this is clearly Eldegard talking, and she's clearly talking to you. So you are a teacher.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like each, I would guess each country, each house, has a crest.
Probably.
Given from the goddess. And people believe that these crests are the key to that house's power. And then Eldegard here is making the assertion that...
the crests are the problem.
The crests are the problem. So maybe they drive people mad or maybe like just obsessed. Or maybe they just make them... what's the word I'm looking for? Just obsessed with their country.
Nationalistic?
Yeah, maybe they make them overly nationalistic.
Yeah.
Like, look at our crest. Our crest is the best crest. Your crest sucks.
Or maybe it's even as... It's like the, it's sort of akin to the Fire Emblem, literally,
yeah.
Where it's, you know, get the pieces of this and, like, it's symbolic, but it's also, you know, get the pieces of this and teasing.
Yeah, and so they're trying to fight to get the other ones, capture the flag, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be. All right, well, let's continue. People are in love with this soundtrack, by the way.
It's nice.
Very orchestral. I applaud it. Yeah. So now you're talking to Eldegard. We talked about this already, but
yeah.
People can't follow him.
Reach for my hand.
Is Eldegard singing? Sounds like it.
Could be.
Could be. And it's the first time I've had a character sing.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Dare to walk this path with me? One misstep, and we fall to our ruin. So take your first step. It's now or never.
Okay, that last part means nothing to me.
No.
I think that's just RPG anime gibberish.
Yeah, pretty much.
Do you dare to seize your destiny? Etc., etc.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I think there's a lot more to be seen, though.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I like the new directions they're going in. It's a matter of execution.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic,
yeah.
But But yeah, as you say, it's still a long time out. We're a year away.
We're a full year away.
So I'm going to just reserve judgment until I know more concrete things.
Yeah, which we... I mean, it's spring 2019 is the final release date there. Okay, so we have 10 minutes left. Boy, I feel like we just started, but we have 10 minutes left. So we're going to use this last 10 minutes. I think we're going to arrange whether it comes up this week or it comes up next week. We'll see what happens. But we want to get a guest on here to talk about NHL. Because NHL 19 was announced. And so I made my own little wish list, but we're not going to have time to go over all of it. But... I mean, I assume you've seen the trailer, or did you avoid it because it's too depressing?
I avoided it because it's too depressing.
Yeah, the NHL 19 trailer was announced. I think it came out not this week, but the last week, but of course we missed last week. I don't care. And I know there's going to be a lot of people out there who might be ecstatic because they play NHL online.
Yeah.
And I know that is a big market base, but if it's not us.
No.
And I think that's a large group of people. But I don't know if it's even the majority, honestly, based off of...
I would seriously doubt it.
Yeah, based off of what I see on forums and on Reddit and online, for the most part, people want additions to this stuff. Don't get me wrong. People want the online to get better.
Yeah.
But there's a huge outcry for them to make the single player better. And if you look at the trailer, it focuses on outdoor rinks and playing, like, and it's got a ones mode now.
Yeah.
And you got a character that you upgraded as a skill tree. I don't particularly care. Like, it's fine. I'm sure they're going to do an okay job with it. They're probably going to mess it up, though. It's not going to be as good as they promise.
Yeah.
But again, it's just a focus on online and multiplayer at the detriment of the fact that they are the worst major sports game.
Single player.
Single player.
By a mile.
By a country mile. And this is from, here's a quote from Will Ho, NHL 19's creative director. Where we see the highest customer satisfaction and people coming back to play over and over again really is online multiplayer. We're hearing from our fans they want more different ways to play online. I don't know what fans you're talking to. I'm calling them out for that. Like, maybe because they're reaching out to players on YouTube. Like, where are they finding these people?
I don't know.
The people that I talk to anecdotally and people that I see online, that doesn't seem to be the outcry at all.
Well, I think it's interesting the phrase he used. Where we find the highest, or what was it? The
customer
highest
satisfaction.
Satisfaction is the online multiplayer. And I'm like, no kidding. Like,
yeah, because it's results on.
What you literally just said was, the thing we do right is the online multiplayer. So what we're going to do is do more of that and not fix the other stuff.
Yeah. And I think what he's... that's true. You can definitely read into that for the first sentence. But in the second sentence, what are people coming back over and over again is to play online multiplayer. That's because it's kind of depressing to play your games, man. But, like, I think NHL 15 or NHL 16, whichever the one was the first one on this new console, was the first NHL game in years, possibly decades, that I didn't buy new or that we didn't buy new.
Yeah.
I bought it used so that EA didn't get my money. I see this as being the same. Like, honestly, am I going to get $100 out of it? Over the next calendar year, probably. But I don't want them to get my money. So I'm going to find a way to do it to avoid it. There was a little bit of news for actual... for Be a GM. First of all, they haven't talked about Be a Pro at all. Which is a travesty. Because the Be a Pro in other games... You've played a FIFA game. I've played an NBA game. Neither of us are super big NFL fans. It's so much better. It's like night and day when you compare the other ones. So they talked about how they have they're updating the physics. I mean, they're always updating the physics. Every year they talk about physics, skating, and hitting.
Yeah.
I get that it's a work in progress, but like, you don't get to put that on the back of the box as a huge update when it's an update every year. You know what I mean? I'm not impressed by it. That's
every
expected.
Year you get a little bit better at this.
You should. So they're talking about how players of different sizes should move differently. Zdeno Chara and Matt Zuccarello should move differently. Yeah.
No kidding.
No, yeah. Well done. You don't get credit for catching up to where you should already have been.
Yeah, okay.
And then the only big update they have to announce is scouting in Be a GM. So in NHL 19, you'll have a separate scouting budget. You'll have to hire and fire scouts with an eye on regional expectations. For example, you may have an expert in Russia, but a mediocre one in elsewhere. Scouts will return with a detailed report, but there's a fog of war element. Players who you scout will have blind spots. no hint at their abilities. You'll have to draft someone, and actually you won't know until you actually see them play. I don't mind that. That's good. Apparently, this guy, Will Ho, the creative director, said it's deep enough to be a standalone product. I don't believe you.
No, I don't either.
There's no chance. Standalone, what do you mean? Like, you could release it for $2 on Steam as an indie game?
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean? Standalone product.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm calling him out. I don't believe it.
Yeah, I think that's sort of my opinion on the whole NHL thing. Just
particularly, I mean, I agree with you. Particularly after we've seen so much good come out of, like, the last time we were on the air, we were fawning about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And when you see a team that's doing it right, like the Spider-Man guys, you listen to them, and even if the game doesn't come out perfect, it's clear that they got it.
Yeah.
EA doesn't get it. They have no clue.
No.
They're way off the mark. It's like I was just watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith the other day, and like they were yelling at you, I can't find the button. Oh, you've never been able to find the button. Like, you know those classic jokes and stuff like that? Satisfied, not for years. Like, it's,
yeah.
All those cliches somehow seem to apply here. Like, EA is like, I think I found the button. I'm like, dude, you haven't even seen the button. You would need a map.
And a compass.
You would need a map and a compass to... You would need a map to get to the store to buy the map on the way to the button. That's how far away you are. You guys have no clue. So, I mean, I have a list of wish lists. I'm not going to go through them. We're going to have to probably... We'll go through them next week. We're going to have a full hour again. If we have a full hour again. Regardless, we'll go through them. It's just disappointing. We'll have to find a way to buy this game so that EA doesn't get the money.
Yeah.
Because you can't justify $80 for this. This is ridiculous, especially if you're a single-player person.
No. So, I think what people need to do on Facebook is sell us on other sports.
Sell us on other sports.
Because hockey's just not happening.
I'm like, honestly, genuinely, I'm like this far away. He said holding up two fingers very close together. I'm like this far away from making like a GoFundMe for 2K. To make a 2K NHL game again. Because for the love of God, make some competition.
Yeah.
Like,
as long
this
as
is
they're the only game in town. This
yeah,
is just...
I was even looking it up a couple weeks ago after the trailer came out. That basically 2K apparently released a mobile game a couple years ago as like a test of the market.
Yeah.
But I hope that there are people at other companies who are looking at this and like they're blowing it. And
yeah,
this is
and
our,
we could do this.
And we could do this. This is our time to shine. And it's not undoable. Other franchises are doing it. Other sports are doing it. There's no reason the NHL should be this far behind. It used to be good. Like, I remember in the previous generation, like, NHL was winning Game of the Year, like, Sports Game of the Year awards.
Yeah.
And now, I, like...
Like, I would put FIFA from, like, 2013 up against this year's NHL.
Yeah, like, I think the NBA game I played was from, like, 2015. And it's
just
better.
Embarrassing.
I think it's... I would bet $80 that the NBA that I played was going to be better than this one. And it was on PC.
Yeah.
People want a PC port.
It's just sad.
It's embarrassing. It's frankly embarrassing.
I didn't want to end on a down note, but... Looks
yeah,
like
after
Fire down.
Emblem was so exciting, we're going to have to be ending on a down note here. Man, it's...
It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. They've missed it. They have no idea. And they like it's almost insulting that they're throwing Gretzky on the cover. Like, PK Subban gets on the cover... And I'm not super, like, down with this, like, overly progressive mindset, but to my knowledge, this is the first black NHL player that's been on the cover of an NHL game.
Yeah.
And you're going to distract people with having Gretzky there, too? Like, why are you doing that? What's this Legends Edition where you're going to throw in more? Like, we get it. You can play as old players.
Yeah, and, like, they say that, like, as a new thing. No, you had that before.
Yeah, you had that before.
That was there.
And most of your audience, if they are these 12-year-old kids, and I don't mean to discredit them, but it's, like, it's younger people playing these games.
Yeah.
They don't know Gretzky.
Yeah.
Like, they know of him, but they haven't seen him play. So being able to relive the legends is only really good if you have an age group that's played. It doesn't matter. We're gonna have a full on long NHL complaint session coming up very soon. But we're simply out of time. That hour flew by. We'll have to see you next week, guys. I believe we're gonna have a next week. Don't quote me on that. Stay tuned on Facebook. Game Over UMFM on Facebook. See you next week, guys.